sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Bernanke has a new plan. 18 days to go until the fiscal cliff, China market soaring. And a great guest today, Frank Curzio, is with us, and we'll talk with him about all sorts of things. And I have some questions about small caps, about the fiscal cliff, and his outlook for 2013. All this and much more on episode number 293 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello and how are you? Happy holidays for all of you that are celebrating whatever it may be in the past, in the future, and of course the new year that's coming around the corner. We are on the final leg of 2013 for the markets, and the incredible amount of indecision that we've seen over the last several weeks is just building even more. Well, we had Bernanke come out with his commentary last week. Markets initially applauded it and then took a step back and said, what the heck is he talking about? Because this new tying, the potential action by the Fed and the monetary policy to the unemployment rate, which then may or may not be pulled, and they may change it, and trying to be a little bit more transparent, but in fact, I think, confusing and clouding the situation. It was much better when they had a specific date. Now they have other targets that they're working on that may or may not be something they stick to. That's what they said. Said if the unemployment rate gets to 6.5%, well, that's when we're going to start thinking about, you know, slowing down on the monetary policy and the buying of bonds, and they adding some more right now. We have new QE, and, you know, it just goes on and on. The fact of the matter is that when you look at really what's gone on after that, we saw that gold came down sharply, even though the euro rose very dramatically into the 131 range, dollar came down, stocks came down, and at the same time, we saw that there was a lot of selling of bonds. Up until Friday, when they started to reverse that and buying bonds again, which is kind of the one day on, one day off. But I tell you something, I'm not thinking that this Bernanke discussion, which went on about, I guess he had a press conference for close to an hour, or maybe even more than that. It was a very long press conference. There were some good questions asked. But I got to tell you something, it was more confusing than, well, probably any other time I've seen Bernanke talk about things. Reminded me of the days with Greenspan where you kind of were left with this, what did he say? After he finished up his commentary, he was much more into using words that would wrap around each other, confuse and confound everyone who listened. Bernanke this time, though, tried to be clear on a very unclear subject matter. And I think that was a problem. He was very clear, though, on one thing and very, I think, upfront that the Fed does not have the power to usurp the bad decisions of Congress and this administration when it comes to the fiscal cliff and when it comes to their inaction, and saying very clearly that the tools they have are very effective for many things, but this is just too much for them to bear. And there's really not much that they can do in the event that bad policy decisions are made. So I think he really did point a finger very dramatically and very effectively to Congress, who, you know, obviously is in a bit of a stalemate. Even though the news that we're seeing is kind of flowing out that there may be some concessions made by the Republicans to allow for a tax on the higher net worth people out there and the citizens of the U.S. At the same time, the subtext was that, but there's got to be some entitlement reform. So, again, more confusion and markets kind of trying to believe that something will be coming around the corner any day now, the closer that we get towards the end of the year. But the problem is, the closer we get towards the end of the year, the more the problem builds, because it can't be reversed from a confidence level and from an indecision level when it comes to corporate America. So just something to think about. But there is about 18 or so days left when we recorded this, and we'll see what happens. I would venture to say that next week, with the tremendous amount of economic data that we have coming out with durable goods. And we have we saw CPI last week. We followed by PPI. Questions about, you know, how are companies doing when we're seeing, you know, a lot of demand slack right now. CPI dropping 0.3%. One of the largest drops in inflation that we've seen over the last several months. But at the same time, the employment numbers seem to be withstanding all of this, whether it's the hurricane, the slowdown in Europe, whatever it may be. We saw about a 340,000 number on claims from last week, on initial claims, which is the lowest we've seen in some time. Below the 350 number is really a mark that's important. Well, we also saw that in China, the manufacturing numbers came up above the 50 level, which is the demarcation point between the contraction of an economy in manufacturing and in the expansion. And all the indicators that came out last week, except for exports, which was interesting, were much better than were expected. And the nice thing was that markets really rallied, probably because they were sitting on their 2009 lows right up until it. People started thinking that maybe there was an opportunity to pick up some of the, you know, the less loved markets right now, and you know, especially going into year end. We talked about this a few times on the show the last several weeks, how we're going to see this performance chase and probably the higher short interest stocks, the smaller caps possibly, and clearly the ones that really have not done well are the ones that are turning around dramatically. So that's something that I'll also talk to Frank about, because I want his opinion on that issue. There's some, you know, real distinct moves that are happening towards the end of the year that you know, may or may not last. There was some news I want to share with you around the world, and I want to talk about gold a little bit as well, and then we'll get to our conversation with Frankie. A couple things in Europe. European car sales fell about 10% in November, and that was the registrations this year to a 19-year low. And registrations in 27 of the EU countries and Switzerland, Norway, and Iceland dropped about 965,000 vehicles last month from about 1 million plus about a year earlier. So we're continuing to see that consumers are really retrenching there. Spanish home prices fell the most on record in the third quarter. And the average house price in there in Spain and apartments declined 15.2% from a year earlier, the most since they started measuring this in 2008, and prices fell about 3.8% from the previous quarter as well. So again, we're seeing that the housing situation is not improving in Spain at all. Now, the euro output, the services and manufacturing, is still in contraction, and it was a little bit better than it had been. It went to about a 47.3 from about 46.5, I believe it was, in November. And that was better, but still in the contraction zone. So you have to realize that while it is stabilizing, when you see contraction, it's still a negative tick to the economy. But again, China's manufacturing is expanding at a faster pace than it was. In December, the preliminary reading was 50.9 from the Purchasing Managers Index. And that compares with a final reading of about 50.5 for November. And that's the first time in 13 months that it was above 50. So again, that's what was really beneficial to investors who are looking to see some turnaround or bottoming in China. Unfortunately, Japan, on the other hand, their industrial output fell about 1.6% in October, according to the final report that came out, because you see the preliminaries and, of course, in the finals. And that compares with about 8.1% drop in September. But, you know, we saw a little bit of gains in industrial production, but that fight that they're having with China over the South Seas Islands is really taking a toll on Japan. And even though the yen has been weakening dramatically over the last several months, you know, we're seeing that the output exports from these countries, which they're so reliant on, particularly in China, I mean, we saw a 1%, or 1.5%, 2% export number, and expectations were for about 7%. So you got to kind of, by the way, wonder how manufacturing is picking up so dramatically when we're seeing that exports aren't there. Now, people may say, well, it's internal consumption and we're going to more of a net importing nation and we're really trying to drive that. And one of the big problems is that the Chinese currency, the yuan, is really shifting from you know, being a weak currency. It's starting to really gain dramatically over the last several weeks. We're also seeing in India the inflation that the inflation rate actually came down a little bit from where it was. The wholesale price index rose about 7.2% after climbing about 7.45% in October. And that was kind of good because, you know, India has a very, very big inflation problem. It really, one of the things that's been holding back their economy is just rampant inflation across the board. And, you know, that's something that is really choking consumers, and it's really taking its toll on that economy. Meanwhile, their stock market's doing pretty darn good. If you take a look at India's stock market compared to, let's say, China's, I mean, it's a whole different ballgame over there. And finally, I think that a couple of things that we have to watch for next week is the continuation of the concern about Spain. They have about 145 billion euros of bonds that have to be rolled over in 2013. And that's a big number. While they didn't ask for a bailout, although they were on the verge of it, it seemed, and they did do some bailing out of their own banks, now the sovereign is going to come into focus again for 2013, even though we're seeing such incredible strength in the euro, which is, from what I see, kind of contradictory to what we're really seeing in that economy. So, again, maybe we're seeing at the end of the year a lot of shorts covering and cleaning up their positions, waiting for the beginning of next year and to see what happens with the fiscal cliff till they actually get into the next positioning. And finally, in the U.S., in the genre of economics on a worldwide basis, the S&P lowered its outlook on the U.K.'s credit rating to negative last week, citing their weak growth and worsening overall debt profile. And they said there's 1 in 3 chance the rating will be downgraded in the next 2 years. And out of all the countries, when you look around the world on AAA basis, only Singapore, by the way, has a larger debt-to-GDP ratio that's expected in 2015. That's if we look at all the AAA-rated countries around the world that's there. So a lot of things happening around the world. I think all eyes will continue on being on the shenanigans that are going on with Congress and the administration, and they're bantering back and forth. And be careful about what you react to until we see a final resolution to this, whatever that may be, because the current state seems to be, you know, this whole idea of, you know, selling on any bad news and really just ramping the market on good news. And what's really interesting, if you really step back and look at it, is there's a lot more optimism in the buying than there has been in the selling. Selling is met oftentimes with a quick reversal, and buying is just dramatic. Now, on the other hand, let's kind of talk about Apple for a second. I think a lot of people are very concerned about what's going on with Apple hitting about 507 on Friday, down from well above 700 when the iPhone 5 came out. There was a couple of downgrades last week, and mainly these were due to the potential for sales of the iPad, the new iPad, and the iPhone 5, and some of the competition in China that has been making some headlines. And, a lot of things that have happened recently, you know, they were kind of priced to perfection for a while. But at the same time, if you look at the cash on hand and you look at the sales growth and you look at the potential for the company and you look at it from a ratio basis or just a pure fundamental basis, I mean, this is nothing wrong with the company. Nothing has changed, really. While it, you know, is deemed to be a growth play, the fact of the matter is that they're a cash cow. They just keep on making money hand over fist. And I don't think at this point we're going to see anything different in the near future. Now, whether or not that stock does eventually get above that 700 range again, or it looks like it's priced right now where there's going to be some supporting characters out there that will come in and bid the stock, particularly if it does crack that $500 level. I think we're going to see some players come in here pretty strongly and bounce the stock. And of course, because the stock is about upwards of about 7% of the NASDAQ and 20% of the NASDAQ 100, you're seeing some very significant moves on the downside on those indices that has really not been seen in the last several weeks or months, because Apple is such a large component of it. Now, one of the things that we did was we were actually short the NASDAQ 100. We reversed the position on Friday into the close, and looking for a bounce here with Apple because of, you know, just the selling pressure. It looks like it hit almost close to a capitulation point on Friday, where there's just, you know, so much, just a all-out selling that went on and driving the price down to a level that is well below what should be intrinsic value for the stock. So we'll see. I mean, you know, you have these kind of situations where you never think Apple's going to come down, and then, you know, you turn around, you never think Apple's going to come back up. Those are usually the times that you want to take a position, right? If you never think, if out there investors are you know, talking about how Apple will never, ever misstep and never have a problem, it's the stock you have to own, the only stock, well, maybe it's time to cut back on your position. And on the other hand, when it's like, hey, I'm getting the hell out of Apple, and you hear everybody saying, I'm selling my position, oftentimes to do the opposite. Now, when you look at the markets right now, there's some really interesting names that have been popping up. JCPenney had a nice run recently on really negative retail news and nothing different from a story standpoint of them trying to rearrange their stores and all that. And, you know, you look at where that is from a technical standpoint about a week and a half ago and how that was basing out so nicely. And actually, it turned out to be a nice position that, you know, made some money if you were able to get at that point. Now, we did buy it and we sold it. And the same thing is happening now with U.S. Steel. You're seeing some of the companies that have been so reliant on Chinese economics and global growth just get absolutely obliterated over the last year. And now all of a sudden there's some hope that there will be a turn in the materials area. And you're seeing that come through. A couple of things I want to mention to you that we are having a special webinar. Trigger Point Research is having a webinar on commodities. Now, if you've never traded commodities, if you've always wanted to see what's going on with futures and maybe corn and how to set up trades in your account and exactly what all the symbology is all about, we're having a webinar next week. The information will be out to anybody who is on our mailing list. And, of course, we'll also post that information on Twitter as well as the Disciplined Investor and Trigger Point Research website. But if you do want to get invited to these in the future, there is an area that you could just sign up for mailings and announcements on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Top right, you just say, hey, you know, put me in that list, or you can actually find it when we announce it on a separate post and on these show notes, as well as over at Trigger Point Research. If you just go to the bottom of the page, there's a little area to put your name and your email address and see what you're interested in, and we'll of course send you those announcements and those updates on a regular basis. So make sure to do that. I want to mention also about something that good time during the holidays to check out things that maybe you haven't played with before, you know, kind of take that time where things are a little bit quieter to look at some things that may be helpful for your productivity and for your effectiveness and efficiency in business and in life. And that, of course, is GoToMeeting, because you can actually create an enormous amount of savings for time and money for travel when you use GoToMeeting, because you can do it from your iPad and you can host a meeting, you can join a meeting, you can do it through video and share documents and have people in your meeting be the announcer we'll talk about, or the person who is actually leading the meeting, and pass it around to whoever you want to, share multiple screens. And you can get a free trial right now just to play with it and check it out over at GoToMeeting.com. GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button and use the promo code PODCAST for a free 30 days of unlimited use of GoToMeeting. A great product and a great time to check it out. You know them, you love them, you gotta have them. And of course, who is that? Frank Curzio is with us today, going to talk about all sorts of things related to what's going on in the future, 2013. We'll probably touch upon the fiscal cliff a little bit and some of his most favorite areas to start investing talk about. And that's, of course, like small caps and some really obscure things, because Frank's great at that. So Frank Curzio, happy holidays, happy Hanukkah, happy Merry Christmas. How are you?
Great. Happy holidays to you and everyone listening in. Great to be on the show.
Yeah, Frank, I got to tell you, as usual, it's like you look at the various list of things that people send in, and they, you know, what podcast it's. I only listen to you and Frank. Only listen to you and Frank because I love you. Because I think, you know, it's interesting. I have a lot of guests on and all that, and sometimes they're really good. We got some great guests. Sometimes they're a little dry, but you, I think, have a great ability to connect with listeners, because I think that, as far as I can tell, it's, you know, you tell it straight.
I definitely appreciate that. And I get the same thing when I do my podcast too. You know, I listen to your podcast and Andrew's podcast, and I could tell you, you know, I started listening to a couple other podcasts and a couple of other business podcasts asked me to be on. And I tell you that, Yeah, they are kind of dry.
Yeah.
It's just, you know what it is? I think we're able to get more into fundamentals, into the charts and everything. I think people appreciate that. And it's all about learning. So I think it's cool, too. As long as you have that, you know, agenda in mind, I think, we'll always have that audience as long as we keep teaching people.
Right. Well, now that we got past the mutual admiration stuff, by the way, you're looking very good lately.
Thanks.
Let's kind of come over a few things. Some of the topics that are on the headlines these days, which I recently wrote about, first of all, 2013 resolution, stop trading by headlines, because the headlines are very misleading. Don't you see that lately? You know, you see this kind of headline of, I don't know, something, and markets drop, markets move up, stock moves down. But it's like whoever it is isn't reading the internals of what's going on. Have you seen something like that happening?
I mean, I've been seeing that go on for a very long time. Remember, you know, you're not going to open up a story that says, hey, Microsoft beat earnings. You're going to open up a story that, you know, Microsoft could fall off a cliff, or, you know, Google is going to eat their lunch, you know, whatever it is. Those are the stories that you're going to open up if those are the headlines. So just be careful, because, you know, everybody out there, when they're writing headlines, they get paid on how many clicks, how many people are watching and stuff like that. So sometimes in more excitement, you're able to click that. And they really like stretch the truth of some of those stories sometimes. Yep. So, yeah, I definitely agree.
Spinning. So let's talk about let's kind of start off with the topic that everybody loves to hate right now. It's the whole fiscal cliff issue. And obviously we know that there's been some meetings. Neither side looks like they're going to budge. And we're getting towards, where are we now? We're at the end of December, closing on the end of December, because you have to consider holiday time and all that, right? And we still don't have any kind of deal. Now, I've kind of ranted and raved over the fact that no matter what deal we're going to get, it's not a fix. It's not a solution, because the only real solution to this deal with the higher deficits and spending and debt outstanding is to actually go over the cliff. Nobody wants to do that, you know, kind of nobody wants that to happen. But there's no fix otherwise. But what's your best judgment in this very cloudy discussion about fiscal cliff on what is going to be the outcome, how to deal with it, you know, anything?
I just think it's a lot of noise right now. Mm-hmm. You know, if we don't get a deal next week, we'll probably see the markets come down a little bit. So, you know, if you have cash on the sidelines, I'd look to add to some of your favorite positions. But I think we're going to get a deal eventually. It might not happen next week. It might happen a week after. You know how our politics are. But, you know, in terms of the long view, I really like stocks here. I think there's a lot of buys out there. I'm not saying necessarily buy the S&P 500 or buy the Russell 2000, a small cap index. But there's a lot of disconnections here, because right now, if you look at the sentiment indicators, people hate stocks today more than they've ever hated, even in right. 2008.
Right.
So when you see bad news on a stock, and I know you'll definitely see this too. It's, you know, the stock will open up and they'll miss earnings, or they just barely miss earnings, and the stock will be down 5% when it opens up. By the end of the day, it's down 30%. I mean, it's amazing how quick people are running to the exits. You know, you're seeing a lot of disconnects in the market. As far as the fiscal cliff's concerned, look, everybody expects a deal. Everybody expects higher taxes. Even the businesses, too, they just want to know what the rules are going to be. This way they can invest. I listen to a lot of conference calls, especially, you know, the bigger companies, whatever, Caterpillar, Microsoft. They just want to know what's going on, especially the banks. Let us know what's going on so we can invest accordingly, because right now we don't know what's going on. But we are expecting, you know, higher taxes across the board. I mean, all the businesses are. We just need to know what the rules are. Once that's in place, I think it sets up for a pretty good 2013. That's just my opinion.
I mean, I can go along with the first part of that, which is the idea that obviously the uncertainty of what is going to be is not only causing problems in hiring, and although we saw some good numbers recently, which is really, I think, against the grain of what should, quote unquote, be happening from every aspect. But yet at the same time, I think the uncertainty of not knowing, more so not knowing how to spend, but how am I going to actually set up my payroll? What accounting changes do I have to make? You know, those things are really big also, because, you know, nobody has that in place. And if, in fact, we get a deal of some sort, or at least some kind of agreement that, let's just call it, in place by December 20th or so, that's still not enough time, really, for these big companies, especially over the holidays, to do what they have to do to set everything up for the next year.
Well, I think once the rules are in place, then, you know, it'll take like a quarter or two for everybody to get adjusted. But as long as we have something in place, because, again, when I heard in the conference calls, a lot of clients are not spending, and they're not spending because the economy is bad. And I know people are going to be disappointed when I say that. I think, you know, they read so many negative headlines. I don't think the economy is that bad. I mean, if you talk to all your friends that have a job, they're all working harder now than they've ever worked.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough for people who don't have jobs. But, you know, you're looking at the unemployment rate. It's not horrible. If you really want a job, you could probably get one. If not, you can make six figures easily in North Dakota or in, you know, in the Bakken Shale or in Texas and Eagle Ford. They're paying out, you know, $100,000 jobs like nothing if you're willing to move your family, which is tough. But you're also seeing, you know, record profits as well. And you have to realize, and you'll say, well, you know, we're not seeing that top line growth. And I understand that. But you have to understand that we have no help this year from Europe or China.
Right. Right. No, I agree.
I'm not saying that we're going to grow at 4 or 5% next year. I just, you know, the recession calls, I just don't see recession. I see 2, 3% growth. And if we get that, because economists are predicting 1, 1.5%, you're going to see a lot of these cyclical companies, even something like steel, you know, the banks, you're going to really see them have a good 2013. I just don't think it's as bad, especially during, you know, during the election. Oh, the economy's so bad, nobody has jobs. Is it really that bad? I mean, I've seen it worse out there, but you know, you're looking at record profits. Companies have more cash on their balance sheets. Again, everybody I talk to, and I know you here, you know, you reach tens of thousands of listeners in your podcast. Everybody that has a job is working harder than they ever did because they don't want to hire these businesses because they don't want to take on extra healthcare costs. So, you know, they're pushing a limit of how much productivity they can get at each worker. I'm just saying that it's not terrible. It's not a dire situation out there, and that's going to go bode well for stocks in 2013.
Yeah, so 2013, okay, I got that, and I agree with you. I think the other disconnect is corporate America versus non-corporate America. The people out there, there's a lot of real, like maybe there's a disenfranchisement, maybe there's a disillusion, maybe there's bad, you know, information from the press. Press is usually somewhat positive, unless, like you said, there's an election coming up and they need to spin it for the negative for them. But when you look at the overall you know, the some of the manufacturing numbers and inventory builds and all that, it is clear that we are seeing at least some holdback by individuals and companies. But, Frank, at the same time, the economy isn't bad. I agree with you in terms of comparatively. China just picked up some of their numbers. We'll see how real that is, which is kind of interesting, by the way, because China's biggest export partners are, let's say, Europe and, you know, obviously the U.S., and their currency has gone up dramatically, and all of a sudden they're starting to pick up their manufacturing. I find it a strange combination over there, but we'll see. So when you look at 2013, and the economy, we're saying, isn't really bad right now, and projecting into there, it's not that bad. I think we really got to focus on corporate America, that the economy for them is generally good because, like you said, they're paying next to nothing for their debt outstanding. They're doing buybacks with debt, obviously. They're paying out special dividends because of the tax issue and the cash on hand. You know, even in the face of Europe's slowdown, some of the emerging markets, Asia, we are still holding up pretty darn well. And the consumer, even though our confidence numbers came down last week pretty significantly, are doing well. So the question that you have to ask, I guess, is where is what would cause further deterioration? Because let's just say that we're not going to, you know, we're not going to really see a lot of growth right now unless we see Europe do better and all this, because it all rolls in. What would cause further deterioration, your point?
I think if we go off the fiscal cliff, there'll be a lot of uncertainty. You'll see the market drop immediately. But I think then you'll get another deal done right away. I think if we see, you know, any disruption in the oil boom, people underestimate what's going on in the oil patch. The amount that we're producing is unbelievable, guys. Yep. We're gonna, 20. I mean, this is a government's estimates, and the government's been dead wrong on anything. I think we're going to be energy independent even within like 5, 6 years. People don't understand, and I've been in the Eagle Ford. I drove 600 miles with an oil expert, and also have great contacts in the Bakken. They're starting to drill now. Just, and this is like new. 2 miles down, and they're hitting new areas. I mean, we're talking about Utica, which you probably heard of,
mm-hmm.
Three Forks and in the Bakken. It's not even, you know, figures in the Bakken where they're drilling right now. So they just discovered even more, going 2 miles down, 2 miles horizontally, and be able to find oil at 100% accuracy. I mean,
amazing. It's amazing. And you know, that's some of the, there's a lot of companies that you could relate to, especially with the fracking concept, with the additional, I mean, for example, U.S. Silica, which is a company we like, SLCA. You know, this is a company that is right involved in that whole issue. You have to also look at the companies like, you know, potentially that do oil services that are going to be making the equipment for this as well. I mean, there's a lot, a wide swath of potential opportunities here. The only negative is this particular administration seems to, you know, not really be desirous of doing that. They are looking for all sorts of other schemes, whether it's wind, solar, hydro, whatever it may be for that. But at the same time, I think they missed the boat on, you know, if we are energy independent, then from there we can build on these other things because it will ensure our energy. It's kind of like, you know, you have all A's in a class and okay, you know, now you can all of a sudden start on something else out of nowhere that you don't know versus continuing with what is known and then go outside the box. Does that make sense?
Makes sense, but for me, I'd argue that it's good that the government's not involved because the government wasn't involved at all with natural gas. And look what happened. We produced so much natural gas that, you know, there's such a wide gap between, you know, gasoline or diesel prices and natural gas that we're seeing Walmart change over its entire fleet. We're seeing, you know, all the big companies change over their entire fleet to natural gas. And it's not so much the price differential in the cost. It's also manufacturing natural gas engines where, you know, it used to cost $80,000 per truck. It wasn't worth it. Now it's $30,000. So, you know, your payback period is like a year away. And I love the fact that the economic where the government's not forcing it down your throat like ethanol, like solar, like wind. All right. You know, waste of money, in my opinion. I know I'm not an environmentalist. You want to send me an email, fcurry@stansberryresearch.com. You could do it. I just disagree with it. This is actual people that you know, businesses that are making money off of this. They're switching over ferry systems to natural gas. They're able to save tens of millions of dollars. I love the fact that the government's not doing anything and the economics work and we have a ton of natural gas. So, you know, you're going to see that transition continue to take place. I get emails all the time. Hey, you know, they just built a natural gas fueling station. They're building them. You know, America's natural gas highway all over the U.S. where trucks, you know, they'll stop every 200 miles to refill and, you know, they could deliver in natural gas. So, you know, that infrastructure is taking place right now. I actually like the fact that the government's not even involved. I mean, if it is, it'd develop quicker. But, you know, I like the fact that, hey, this is working. The economics work. And, you know, they're doing it on their own. It's pretty cool.
I'm with you on that. And I agree that government intervention usually doesn't help things. I just hope they don't go the opposite way to try to, you know, like with the concept of what they do with coal, which, you know, okay, we can talk about the economy, the environment with that and all. But at the same time, you know, I agree, you know, the laissez-faire attitude is much better for capitalism, which is interesting because they can't seem to understand that when it comes to the Fed, who believes that, you know, they have to be the answer for everything. Government has to, you know, when something happens, they need to step in. It's a real, you know, it's going to get me pissed off. Let's not talk about this anymore.
Fine, that's fine. We can talk more about stocks or anything you want.
Let's talk about some small caps. Let's talk about why you think there's some interest in the small cap area, which, by the way, is usually the first area that's hit when markets come down. But over the last, I'll even call it 4 weeks or so, actually, small caps have been very resilient.
Yeah, we had a fantastic year for Small Stock Specialist, which is my newsletter for subscribers. We're up a ton. 2011 was a little rough. There's a lot of volatility, but you have to be able to adapt to the markets. So right now, we're seeing incredible volatility where you don't have to pay up for anything. If you like a stock, just wait. And even Apple, right? I mean, you know, you love Apple, you can wait. I mean, every stock seems to come down to you. And the sell-offs in small caps, and people have been listening to me, probably listened to me for about 7-8 years on podcasts, and you as well, and I've never said this. I've never seen this many quality companies or this many deals in a small cap sector in my career. I've been in the business for almost 20 years. And the reason is you'll see a company like Groupon, right? Everyone's like, oh, Groupon's terrible. Groupon's actually not a bad company. I get all the emails and everything. I wouldn't buy it at $25, but you know what? It went down to like $280. And, you know, they have $2 in cash on the books. And you see all the hedge funds come in. You're talking about a stock that went from 25 to 3. So people have to realize that, you know, if you're looking at a stock, you say, Groupon's terrible. There's a ton of competition. It's horrible. You know, there's always a price you'd pay for something. And it's important to realize that in the small cap world. Even Dendrion. Dendrion was 16. It went all the way down to 4. It's at the levels before Provenge, which is their cancer drug, got approved by the FDA. And the stock just jumped up like 25%. You're looking at Steel Dynamics. Do I think steel's a great industry in 2013? It's a cyclical industry. Maybe it does okay with China rebounding. But Steel Dynamics is trading at 10 times earning, pays a 3% yield. They're going to grow those earnings more than 20%. Because they had a down year last year. Over the next 2 years annually, I mean, you're seeing unbelievable. Cypress Semiconductor, I mean, at $10. Are you kidding me? So, you know, we were able to pick that up at 9. I'm not bullish on the semiconductor industry. And I know the PC sales are down. And, you know, Apple, you know, they have exposure to Apple. And they just, you know, Apple just got a bad report or a bad write-up saying that, you know, that they're expecting less sales. But you know, you're looking at Cyprus. Insiders are actually buying right now. It's trading at 7x earnings. It was, you know, $20. It came down to $9. So, you know, the insiders are buying at this level. I there's just so many deals out there. So don't buy the Russell 2000 because I'm not too sure where it's going to go. But I know if you wait and you're patient, and even you've seen the hedge funds, like I said, with Groupon, you know, they're up like 50%, 80%. It's up 100% from its lows in a few weeks. Unbelievable, unbelievable deals if you're patient.
Yeah, and it's interesting because one of the things that I am noticing, and I think it's something that I think we do have to recognize, is that coming to the end of the year also, and in January for that matter, there is oftentimes a performance chase. That's fine. There's also a realization that there's going to be some portfolio rebalancing that goes on into the year end, of course, to the close of the year, and then obviously back again in January, a rebalance again in the beginning to kind of start the year, and that usual, you know, beginning of the year euphoria that, okay, it's a new year, let's kind of get going on all this. But one of the things that we are seeing clearly, and it ties into exactly what you're saying, is that the stocks that have been the most obliterated over the last year or so, maybe even 6 months, have been all of a sudden picking up nicely. You know, you look at a JCPenney, which, you know, nobody has anything too good to say about it, except for the folks that are, you know, really like hardcore, that they love the company with Ron Johnson and all that. And that stock has just moved up, you know, beautifully after some lousy earnings. And what you're seeing is that I think the end of a flush out on some of these, where people are like, okay, that's it. Selling pressure is now declining, and they're looking for opportunities, particularly the ones with the high short interest, that really can get moving if they start buying into it and the shorts just all of a sudden blow out. And I think Groupon was an interesting example of that. We know all the problems. We know that the board of directors is, you know, a disaster. But what you're also seeing is many of the stocks that were the favorites that did really well coming down. Maybe people are starting to take profits in that, and, you know, that they're looking at the fiscal cliff issue as an opportunity now to book some profits. But, yeah, I agree with you that it's very interesting, not only in the small cap arena, but also large cap. The stocks that have the most downside recently look like they're rotating back and people are looking to buy it. Just look what happened with the banks over the last however long.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. And even with JCPenney, I mean, I just looked at it and saw that it was 20. I think it was down to 15. You have to realize, like, everyone's like, JCPenney's horrible. And I sent you a note that, you know, they burned through something like $350 million in cash. Mm-hmm. And I stock from, I think it was... we made like 60% profits and we traded around it. We did well. And I told everybody to basically avoid it, even at 17, because it's a wait and see story. I mean, you know, they have cash. They have another $1.5 billion credit line. They're not going out of business. But if they're going to spend that much money to convert their stores over to the new model, they're going to be in big trouble. But if they do it, this stock's going to be worth a lot more than $20. So interesting to see, because we're not just seeing trading opportunities, we're seeing big hedge funds you know, take big stakes in this, and you know, they're not looking for real trades here. I mean, they're looking, you know, taking big stakes to really hold this long term. It's a difficult story. I'm worried about it here because I didn't think they'd burn through that much cash. It's going to be interesting to see how JCPenney plays out, though.
Yeah, we just sold our position in JCPenney. We bought it, I think, at 18, and there was a clearly resistance point, and I said we're going to knock, when we bought it, we'll knock it back when it comes to there. So we made, whatever, $2.50, $3 on it, so 12% or something like that, or so. But here's the thing I think that's also very interesting is that when you look at some of these, you know, some of the stocks, one of the things you're also finding is, as you said, there's a price for any buyer, you know, somewhere around here. Some of the stocks that have been serial disappointers, like Verifone, you know, they've been really just having all sorts of trouble because they have a big exposure to Europe. But into earnings, let's say 3 weeks prior to earnings, you see that run up into earnings because the shorts are covering and you want to make sure that you're positioned right and maybe not ahead of any bad news or good news for that matter that may get you really hurt. But, you know, we're still finding that there is buyers. There's tons of liquidity in the market, even though volumes aren't really tremendous. And, you know, you're still seeing the fact that a lot of countries outside of the U.S. are putting their money to work in the U.S. And they're doing it with bonds and they're doing it with stocks because they want to get out. I mean, we know people in China that the talk is basically, hey, you know what? We want our money out of here for 100 different reasons. And they're moving it where? To the best, you know, best exchange in the world right now in terms of, you know, at least all the things that are happening. The banks are getting better. The balance sheets are better. Tier 1 capital is getting better. The housing market is recovering and doing much better. I mean, look at some of the housing stocks. They're at all-time highs, a few of them. And look at some of the related ones, like a Home Depot, Lowe's and all. I mean, it's Mohawk Industries or, you know, the flooring company and lumber. I mean, lumber was, on Friday, lumber was limit up on the day.
Yeah, it's amazing that the housing, that's another thing too, a positive into next year where you have to be careful. It's definitely a housing recovery. It's not going to be like it was in 2007, but just that recovery in order to get a lot of these foreclosures off the market, the housing market, no matter what statistics you look at, even if you're the biggest bear, you have to say, wow, you know, it looks pretty good heading into 2013. Just to even provide, I want to get this in too before I go, is one of the areas I'm seeing is small caps, and don't be fooled with small caps. People think small caps are aggressive. Look for small caps. I'm writing a whole issue on this that pay dividends. Like I didn't mention Cypress Semi. Cypress Semi came down so much, they pay a 5% yield, easily have cash flow to pay that dividend for another 4 years. Steel Dynamics, also high yield. You're looking at a company like Diebold, 4% yield. This is a company that's raised their dividend just as long as McDonald's, over 30 years. So, you know, they consistently raise their dividend. It's trading, Diebold's trading at, 11 times earnings. They are growing. You're seeing banks looking to cut costs, so they're going to go to more automation. So, you know, now you're looking at, you compare that to, say, a McDonald's that's trading at 17 times forward earnings, or Coca-Cola trading at 16 times forward earnings. So now these small caps, you know, they are kind of conservative, right? They pay a nice yield, easily can pay their dividend. They have growth, unlike a lot of these large caps that are paying dividends that have no growth, top or bottom line. And, you know, they pay like the same yield. So, you know, and plus they could actually get taken over. So I think we're going to see a shift to a lot. If you're looking for yield, look for small caps. And I'm defining small caps anywhere from like 2 to 4 billion. Some people would say that's a mid cap. A lot of great companies in that area paying 3, 4, 5% yields that have that growth that, a lot of companies, a lot of large caps don't have. I mean, really, you want to buy McDonald's at 17 times forward earnings or Coca-Cola at 16 times forward, go right ahead. I'm not doing that. I mean, if you own it for years, good for you. You're up a lot. But right now, I don't think I wouldn't put new money to work in those stocks.
And those stocks are not takeover candidates, the last few that you mentioned. You know, who's going to buy Starbucks? Who's going to buy McDonald's? Who's going to buy Nike? It's just not going to happen. But the small caps do have that opportunity. And in particular, I think we all have to recognize that a lot of companies have a lot of cash on the books. We keep on saying that. And where does that money go? Well, the money could go back to dividends. Okay, great. It can go for more R&D, but it all can also go for smart acquisitions that are accretive, that maybe there's some crossover. Acme Packet isn't a good example. I mean, their last several earnings have been awful. In my opinion, we don't own them, but in my opinion, Acme Packet's an interesting one for like a Cisco to buy, and there's plenty of cash laying around, and many of these companies have talked about that they're looking for strategic acquisitions and things that would be beneficial to them.
No choice. I mean, you know, they're not going to be, they're so big, some of these companies, even Cisco. I mean, you know, how much could they grow without those acquisitions? If everybody had a strategy like Oracle, Oracle's amazing. I mean, I think it's the only large cap tech that knows how to, you know, acquire companies and make money off of them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Microsoft has been terrible. Cisco's had, you know, Hewlett Packard. You just look at somebody, the money that's completely wasted. You know, you look at Oracle and just taking over companies and just implementing. It's just amazing how that business model has worked for them. But you might see that go on because, look, these companies, is McDonald's going to buy back their stock at 70 times forward earnings? I hope not. I think that's a bad decision by management. Are they going to raise their dividend? Well, maybe, but then you got to worry about, you know, taxes on the other end, right? Who knows what a dividend tax is going to be? They're definitely going to be raised. But, you know, acquiring companies seems like the best use of their cash right now, especially right now because you're seeing, you know, you could probably get good bargains in the market. I mean, we have 0% interest rates, but a lot of small caps that don't have great balance sheets are having trouble borrowing money right now, especially if you're looking at the junior miners, which is really aggressive. They can't borrow money at all. So, you know, you're seeing these guys dictate their terms right now. I think you're going to see a big acquisition market in 2013.
Now, the two other things I want to talk about is gold, and I want to talk about the gun companies. Let's start off with the gun companies for a second. We know that horrible tragedy that happened this week with the senseless shooting and the deaths and all, just horrible, horrible situation up north in Connecticut, et cetera. Now, one of the things we saw that on the news, for example, Smith & Wesson was up about 2% during the day on Friday and then ended up down about 4%. Sturm Ruger has been, if you look at that chart, has been having a real big problem even after a good earnings number. And the stock came in and it was kind of treading water on Friday and then dropped, I think, about 3.5% as well. So the big discussion is, and I think the fear is, that there's going to be some gun control laws that will be put in place. But it's kind of interesting. When you look at the gun companies from what they've been doing, their outlook and all that, it's been very, very good. And some of the reason has to do with the, I think, fear that there'll be gun control laws put in place. But if there are, if that's possible, if, you know, it can get by all the different parties that don't want this to happen, the NRA and all that, Isn't it kind of the thought that if there is gun control, there'll be a big rush to go buy guns for those people that are worried about any kind of new laws coming to place, and some of this drop in the companies is a little bit potentially suspect?
Well, that's what happened, I think, 5 years ago when Obama had his first term, where people were like, oh, you know, if he gets elected, we're going to see, you know, more gun laws. And, you know, and what happened was a complete opposite. You think these companies sold off. Everybody ran out to buy their guns and ammo. Remember, they run out of ammo, ammo anywhere. And it was interesting. And that pattern carried over for like the next few years, where these companies significantly outperformed. I don't know what the gun controls are going to be. I know that, you know, and I'm familiar with this story. And again, you know, I have two kids. It's horrible what happened. The guns apparently were legal. They were licensed. It's in Connecticut. It's amazing because I'm in Florida and I used to live in New York, as everybody knows. And, you know, New York, you can't carry a gun. Everybody has a gun in Florida. Everybody has a gun. And I speak to some of these people and everybody in Florida should not have a gun. Believe me. You don't see that stuff happening too much in Florida. You see it happening in other states. But, you know, if people want a gun, they'll get a gun. So I don't know what the laws are going to be. I do know that when you're looking at these two stocks, they completely broke down. So I would honestly stay away. And Andrew, you'd probably have a better opinion on these because of the technical point of view. But these are two stocks where I saw, you know, Smith & Wesson come out with a blowout quarter. I mean, it looked fantastic. And the stock sold off at probably about 15% off its highs. I didn't like that too much. So, you think, well, you know, they came out with a good quarter. Let's see. You got to be careful. When you're seeing the stock not moving up, all they need is 1 week quarter, and that's it. I mean, you'll see the stock fall 30, 40%. But I'd stay away from these companies because I think you made your money in them, and I think there's a better place to put your money than buying these stocks up here.
Yeah, we actually had Sturm Ruger through that whole ride. It was very nice. And then we cut it, which is great. And then it kind of came down, like you said, about 15, 20%. Recently picked up Smith & Wesson, actually. On the fact that after the earnings, it did come down dramatically. There was one big day of it dropping and then another day, and we kind of bought it. And then it turned around and started moving back up when the realization was that, hey, you know what? They have a great outlook happening here. And then, of course, Friday dropping about 4%. But I agree with you. Sturm Ruger is looking interesting, but that chart really came down very, very fast, and there's not much support right there. Smith & Wesson, on the other hand, I think it, you know, got a little bit beaten up too much considering what's gone on. But again, you know, you can't make a short-term prediction necessarily on this, but it does look like it's better situated than Sturm right now at the moment. But I do kind of wonder what will happen over the next week or so when the realization is that, hey, there may be more gun control laws, and the knee-jerk reaction to sell because of this situation, you know, and looking back at previous horrible, shootings at various, whether schools or, you know, wherever it was, but yeah, I mean, I think that this is going to be looked at once again, especially because so many innocents and the young children were killed. But the problem then you get back to is what you said is they were bought legally. So, you know, how much more control can you put on it?
It's going to be, and I told you, you know, I went through the Eagle Ford and I spent a week in Texas. I could tell you something. If they outlawed guns in Texas, it'd be riots.
Yep.
It'd be riots. I mean, you know how everybody has guns here? Everyone has like 10, 15 guns, 20 guns. It's insane. Like in Texas, I'd never seen it. Like people just, I walked into a restaurant, everybody has a gun on them.
Nice.
I mean, it's almost like, you know, I've been to China. I think Texas was even more crazier than China. I felt like I was in another world when I was in Texas. So, I don't see those laws going nationally, but it's going to be interesting to see what they do. But, you know, with these two companies, I don't know. I mean, the technicals, they broke down a little bit, but Smith & Wesson is trading at 9x earnings. So, you know, not too expensive for a company that's been growing pretty good.
Yep. Let's talk about gold for a second, because gold is getting me a little bit antsy in terms of we made a call earlier in the week that gold looks like it was going to start breaking down here. And it did. It broke down pretty substantially back under 1700. It's interesting because you look at the fact that, you know, gold oftentimes trades on two things. It trades on the dollar's weakness or strength. It also trades on the potential for inflation. Well, we saw the CPI number on Friday came out at a negative 0.3. There's no inflation. Bernanke says there's no inflation. You know, he's continuing on. And even after Bernanke came up with this new, very confusing language of when and if and more and less, and, you know, he made it more complicated, in my opinion. The thing is that gold sold off right after that. So what's your kind of take on gold? Because we're negative on gold here.
You know what? 12 straight years, gold went up. I mean, it's amazing. 12 straight years. What do you know that went up 12 straight years? I mean, nothing. I can't even think of anything. So Will gold come back down? I know the policy is to ease a lot more, and you know, people are buying gold. Are you saying, you know, it's an alternative currency? And I get that. In terms of buying gold, no, I don't think I'd buy gold here, Bullion. I think that there's a big advantage. If you're going to buy anything gold, buy the royalty companies. Royal Gold, Sandstorm Gold, Franco-Nevada, these companies are absolutely amazing. They have the best business model in the world. What they do is they take, you know, they'll take a gold company, a regular gold company, and they'll put up the money. They're like finance companies. They're like the Sachs of the gold industry. So they'll put up money and they'll take a percentage of whatever mine, say if the mine's supposed to produce, they'll take 15% and put up $200 million. Once that mine produces, they get a certain percentage for the rest of the mine's life. Now, the thing is, if they run into any problems or any higher costs or anything, they don't have to pay for that. So that causes all the burden on the actual company. And the thing is, they have kickers in place where they receive warrants if this doesn't pay out. And perfectly legal. I mean, if you look at it, it looks like you know, you just did a deal with John Gotti, where you know they're going to get paid no matter what. But these companies are absolutely fantastic. They're called royalty companies: Royal Gold, Franco-Nevada, Sandstorm Gold, all run by great management teams. And for these guys, they're able to purchase the gold at $400 when these mines are producing. So they're just generating masses of, they're just basically generating tons of cash flow and putting out more deals now. The reason why they're so good is because right now the cost to produce an ounce of gold has skyrocketed. It's almost more than $1,000 an ounce. So some companies, it's even $1,200, $1,300 an ounce. So if it comes down, gold companies will actually be losing money. Where these guys, it's just that they're not going to make more profits. They're able to buy for $300, $400 an ounce and able to sell it on the market, even $1,000. They're still making money no matter what. So if you're going to look at stocks, look at the royalty companies. It's the best business model I've ever seen in business. And I think they're fantastic companies, and you're getting a little bit of a pullback, especially Royal Gold at 80, at the $80 level. I think it's a fantastic buy.
Yep, good stuff. Well, Frank, I know you have lots of things to do, and I want to thank you for joining us, of course, as usual. And I want to tell you and your family, have a great holiday. We'll speak, you and I, but I'm telling it from our audience to you. Have a great holiday, and we will definitely pick it up in 2013 to see how this all plays out and what the new the concepts in terms of the markets, depending on what happens with the fiscal cliff, the earnings outlook, economic outlook, and, you know, try to give some more great advice and thoughts and, you know, some education, which is what we're, you know, all about here. So thanks so much.
Thank you, and happy holidays to you and your family. Hopefully we'll all get together soon.
That'd be great. All right, Frankie, be good. Frankie Curzio from Stansberry Research. You can find all the information there at their website, or you can find a link directly on the show notes of this page. And, you know, he not only does Frankie, but a lot more people write for them on all sorts of different wonderful newsletters that are all very classically designed in terms of, you know, giving you, you know, the backstory as well as, you know, what is the pick of the month, the week, whatever it may be, plus a variety of other informational newsletters that probably, if you haven't read them, you really should go check out what's available, because the Stansberry Research has some really a wide selection and really some great stuff. So thanks a lot again, Frank. Talk to you. Now, next week, I do have on the docket Larry Williams, who will be with us, and we're also trying to get Barry Ritholtz for the end of the year. We've talked to him, and we're trying to make his scheduling a little bit easier to be a guest on the Disciplined Investor podcast. Make sure to listen to DH Unplugged. I think you'll find that very humorous, where John C. Dvorak and I talk about all sorts of things from politics to markets to the crazy things around the world that just don't make sense, and the opportunity to kind of laugh with us, but also find out some good news. And our little game that we play with the stock picks is kind of fun. You can always track those on the Google spreadsheet that we have prepared. And otherwise, I do want to wish you a happy and a healthy again. And if you have any questions, just find me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And if you have Twitter, Andrew Horowitz, one word, Andrew Horowitz is my handle. Make sure to follow me there. Trying to give you the latest information and updates on a regular basis. And you'll, I think, enjoy some of the feed that we pass through there and some of the interaction that we have as well. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next week. Au revoir.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.